Welcome to The Deep Dive. We're the show engineered to help you slice through all that information overload, you know, bypass the endless reports and notes, and really pull out the most valuable nuggets of knowledge from a whole stack of sources.
Right. The goal is simple. Get you truly well-informed, fast and clear, without that feeling like you're drowning in data.
Exactly. And today, we're diving deep into Old Dominion Freight Line, Inc. You might know them as ODFL. They might not be a household name for everyone, but they are a serious force. They're the second largest less-than-truckload carrier LTL in the U.S. And, well, they're widely seen as a leader in their field.
Mm-hmm. And it's a really fascinating company to look at because ODFL consistently holds on to this premium valuation, not just compared to others in trucking, but often in the wider market.
Even though they operate in freight, which is, let's be honest, notoriously cyclical, right? Goes up and down with the economy.
Precisely. So our mission for this deep dive is really to unpack the core stuff, you know, the elements that let ODFL stand out. How do they keep up that impressive profitability? How do they keep growing market share, even through tough times like that freight recession we just saw?
Okay.
We're going to explore their unique business model, the tricky industry dynamics they have to navigate, their competitive advantages, which are pretty significant, and their financial resilience is quite something.
So by the end, you, our listener, should have a really holistic view of what makes ODFL a, quote, premium operator. What makes them more than just a company moving boxes?
That's the plan. And to give you that view, we've dug into a lot of material. We've used an in-depth investment analysis framework, obviously ODFL's own annual reports, SEC filings.
Standard stuff there.
Yeah, but also comprehensive industry reports. We're talking top names like Transport Topics, Morningstar, Optum, Mordor Intelligence, plus, you know, all the various earnings releases.
And this covers a good stretch of time, right? Not just a snapshot.
Definitely. We're looking at data spanning from, say, 2022. Right through the middle of 2025. So, yeah, it's going to be a truly comprehensive look at what makes this company tick.
Okay, let's get into it then. Let's unpack this right from the start. For anyone listening who maybe doesn't live and breathe logistics, what exactly is less than truckload freight? And why is this specific niche so, well, so central to Old Dominion's whole operation and their success?
Right. Good place to start. Less than truckload, or LTL. It's a specific part of the trucking world, and it focuses on consolidating smaller shipments.
Smaller shipments, meaning?
Meaning shipments that, you know, on their own, they don't fill up a whole truck trailer. Imagine you're a small manufacturer. Maybe you've got, I don't know, 5 pallets of goods to send to a customer.
Okay, not enough for a whole semi-truck.
Exactly. Yes. So instead of paying for a whole truck and wasting all that space and money, an LTL carrier like ODFL comes and picks up your 5 pallets, but then they also pick up similar small shipments from other customers in that same area.
Ah, okay, so it's like a highly organized ride share, but for freight.
That's a great way to put it, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. All those different smaller shipments then get taken to a local service center. Think of it like a big sorting hub.
Right.
At this hub, all that freight is meticulously sorted and then consolidated onto bigger line haul trailers. Sometimes people call them relay trucks. These are the big ones headed to another service center, one that's near the final destinations for all those combined shipments.
Okay, so they get gather it locally, sort it, send it off in bulk.
Precisely. And those big line haul trucks usually travel overnight, sometimes hundreds of miles. Once they get to the destination service center, the whole process reverses. The freight is broken down again from the larger trailers and reloaded onto smaller pickup and delivery trucks, P&D trucks.
For the final stretch.
For that final leg of the journey to the end customers. Now, this whole thing, it's often called a hub and spoke model. And let me tell you, it's incredibly complex. It really demands significant network density, lots of those hubs and spokes close together, and just incredible operational precision to make it work efficiently.
I can imagine one little hiccup could mess things up down the line.
Oh, absolutely. The slightest misstep, maybe a misplaced pallet or a truck that's just an hour late, that can create ripples through the entire system. Delays pile up. It needs to run like clockwork.
And it sounds like ODFL has really, really mastered this intricate dance.
They absolutely have. It's their thing. ODFL's business is overwhelmingly concentrated right here in this LTL segment.
How much are we talking? Like mostly LTL?
More than mostly. LTL services consistently account for over 98% of their total revenue. 98%. So it's their singular strategic focus, their operational focus. Everything revolves around LTL.
Wow.
And this, you know, this intense specialization lets them just refine their processes constantly. They invest in very specific infrastructure for LTL. They build out their network purely optimized for LTL efficiency and that all-important service quality. It was a deliberate strategic choice, and, well, it's clearly paid off for them, big time.
Okay, so LTL is clearly their bread and butter, like 98% you said. Mm-hmm. But do they offer anything else, just to sort of round things out for customers? Because modern supply chains, they can get pretty complicated, right? It's not always just simple A to B domestic shipping.
That's true. They do offer a bit more. Mm-hmm. But it's really ancillary to that core LTL business. Collectively, these other services account for less than 2% of their total revenue.
Okay, so really small add-ons. Like what?
Well, they're designed to provide a more complete solution, right? So things like expedited shipping, you know, for freight that's really time sensitive, container drayage that's basically moving shipping containers to and from ports or rail yards. They also do truckload brokerage. So for those times when a customer does need a full trailer, they can arrange that. And even some supply chain consulting, kind of leveraging their deep logistics expertise to help customers out.
Makes sense. It adds value without taking their eye off the ball, off that core LTL focus. What about global reach? Is it just domestic LTL, or can they help a customer shipping stuff internationally?
Yeah, they do extend their reach globally. They have a service line called OD Global. And through that, they provide international freight forwarding. We're talking destinations across the Caribbean, Europe, Asia, Central America, South America.
So they handle that themselves, or how does that work?
No, they don't do it independently. It's done through strategic alliances. Mm. The most notable one is with a company called Mallory Alexander International Logistics. They're a full-service logistics provider.
I see, a partnership.
Exactly. And this partnership lets ODFL offer customers a kind of seamless, single-source global solution. Think about a large customer managing a really complex international supply chain.
Mm-hmm.
Being able to have one reliable point of contact for both their domestic LTL needs and their international freight forwarding, that's a huge capability, a major value add for them. And this global piece, combined with their absolute core LTL service, it all leans heavily on their backbone, which is just this vast geographic footprint and unparalleled network density here in the U.S.
Okay, density. Let's talk about that network. How big is it?
As of early 2025, ODFL operates 261 service centers. And these aren't just randomly placed. They are strategically located across 48 U.S. states.
261. That's a lot of dots on the map.
It is. And it's not just a sprawling network they inherited. It's one they built through consistent and, frankly, significant investment.
How significant? Because building something like that from scratch sounds, I mean, almost impossible for a new company today. It must be a huge barrier.
It absolutely is. Get this. Over the 10 years leading up to 2024, ODFL invested roughly $2.1 billion specifically into building and strengthening its service center network.
Wow. Billion with a B.
Yep. They've been methodically expanding their footprint, adding capacity year after year, making sure they have the physical infrastructure, not just for today's freight, but for future growth. And importantly, they built most of this network themselves, organically, avoiding the kind of messy patchwork of acquisitions that you see with some competitors, which can lead to integration headaches.
Okay, so they invested heavily in building this dense, organic network. What does that actually mean for their customers? What's a tangible benefit of having 261 carefully placed service centers? How does that make shipping better for, say, a small business using them?
It translates directly into superior service, especially speed and reliability. This extensive network gives them comprehensive nationwide coverage, sure, but it also lets them offer highly competitive transit times.
Faster shipping, basically.
Significantly faster, often. Here's a key metric. Approximately 70% of ODFL shipments are delivered on a next day or second day basis. 70%.
That's quick for LTL, right?
Very quick. And that speed, combined with their reliability across a national footprint, that's a massive draw, especially for large national accounts who demand consistency and speed everywhere they operate. Imagine you're a manufacturer relying on just-in-time inventory.
Yeah, need those parts exactly when expected.
Exactly. Knowing your parts will arrive in 1 or 2 days consistently, no matter where in the country they're going, that's a huge competitive advantage for that manufacturer. So this network investment, it's really foundational to their whole OD value proposition. It's not just dots on a map. It's speed and reliability infrastructure.
Okay, that makes sense. Now, we hear ODFL often called the gold standard for service in LTL. That sounds nice, but, you know, good service can be a bit subjective. What does it actually mean in terms of hard numbers, and why does that level of reliability matter so much to their customers?
Yeah, that's a critical point. For ODFL, good service isn't subjective at all. It's measurable, and their metrics are, frankly, peerless in the LTL industry.
Okay, give us the numbers.
They consistently achieve a 99% on-time service rate.
99%?
Wow, think about that. Out of every 100 shipments, 99 arrive exactly when they're scheduled to. And maybe even more impressively, their cargo claims ratio, that's claims for damaged or lost freight, is incredibly low. Just
0.1%. 0.1%. That's minuscule.
It is. 0.1% of shipments result in a claim. Given the sheer volume of diverse freight they handle every single day, moving through multiple hubs, that's astonishingly good.
Those numbers are seriously impressive. So, okay, why is that level of reliability so profoundly important for shippers? What's the so what for a business that chooses ODFL? Why pay potentially more for that?
Because for shippers, especially those in manufacturing, retail, or e-commerce, who often run very lean, just-in-time supply chains, this level of reliability isn't just a nice to have. It's a powerful competitive weapon for them.
How so?
Think about the true cost of a late or damaged shipment. It can be enormous, far beyond the cost of the freight itself. Imagine a production line shutting down because a critical component didn't arrive on time. That could cost thousands, maybe tens of thousands of dollars per minute in lost output.
Ouch.
Or think about a retail store. A delayed shipment might mean missing a key promotional window or losing a sale entirely because the item wasn't on the shelf. Damaged goods mean write-offs and unhappy customers. These costs, the costs of disruption and unreliability, they far outweigh any small savings a shipper might get by choosing a cheaper but less dependable carrier.
So ODFL isn't just selling trucking space. They're selling certainty, peace of mind, avoiding those huge disruption costs.
Exactly. They're selling certainty and peace of mind in what can be a fundamentally unpredictable logistics world. They're essentially helping customers de-risk their supply chains. And that makes their premium service incredibly valuable, which is why customers are willing to pay a premium for ODFL. They're buying insurance against costly failures. They're eliminating anxiety.
Yeah, that clicks. So their superior service allows them to charge premium prices, which then generates the profits to fund ongoing investments,
right,
to maintain and even improve that service. It really is a powerful self-reinforcing cycle, a virtuous cycle.
That's precisely it. And it does more than just fund investment. It fosters a loyal customer base. Customers who've been burned by unreliable carriers learn that the cheapest rate often comes with huge hidden costs. They stick with ODFL because the total cost of ownership, including reliability, is lower.
And they've got the awards to back it up, right?
They do. Their performance has been recognized externally, consistently. ODFL has won the Mastio Quality Award as the hashtag #1 national LTL carrier for 15 consecutive years.
15 years straight.
Yep, an unbroken streak.
Yep.
It's a powerful testament to their sustained excellence and a company culture that just relentlessly prioritizes reliability and service above everything else.
And how does technology fit into this picture? Is it just, you know, a necessary cost of doing business these days, or is it genuinely an enabler that helps them deliver this top-tier service and hit those incredible metrics?
Oh, it's absolutely an enabler, a significant one. ODFL invests heavily in technology, and not just for the basics like tracking. They use it to drive both internal efficiency and to enhance the customer experience.
Okay, like what specifically?
Well, for customers, they have their online platform, ODFL for Hay. It gives customers real-time shipment tracking, quick rate quotes, easy access to documents, basically empowering the customer with transparency and control.
Standard portal stuff, but probably done well.
Right. But internally, their systems are incredibly sophisticated. They use advanced software for everything. Load planning, figuring out the optimal way to fill trailers, line haul routing, dispatch optimization, even increasingly automated dock operations to speed up sorting and loading. This integrated tech stack is absolutely crucial for enabling that network efficiency and ensuring those high service levels. It helps prevent those errors and delays we talked about from cascading through the system. Now, another really key piece of ODFL strategy and a major differentiator, especially in the LTL industry, is their operational model. They operate as a single, integrated, union-free organization.
Union-free. That's interesting. How does that give them an edge compared to some of their big competitors who are unionized?
It provides significant operational flexibility. Unionized carriers often face more restrictive work rules, which can dictate specifically who does what job, when, and how. They also sometimes carry heavy legacy pension liabilities, which would be a financial drag.
Mm-hmm.
ODFL doesn't have those constraints.
Can you give us a concrete, like, day-to-day example? How does that flexibility actually translate into better operations or lower costs for ODFL, something a union shop might struggle with?
Sure. A simple but important example is freight handling at their service centers. In a unionized environment, there might be strict rules saying only a designated dock worker can load or unload freight from a trailer. A driver might have to just wait.
Okay.
At ODFL, because of their model, a driver, if needed, can pitch in and help handle freight on the dock, maybe help load their own truck faster or help out during a busy period.
Seems small, but I can see how that adds up.
It does. It boosts efficiency. It cuts down on idle time for both drivers and equipment. And it helps ensure a smoother flow of goods, especially during peak hours or if they're short-staffed on the dock. It allows them to optimize their labor across different tasks, minimizing unproductive time. It's about agility and avoiding those legacy structures that can sometimes slow things down.
Okay, so the union-free model adds flexibility. What else feeds into their operational advantage?
Well, combine that flexibility with their unified technology platform we just talked about,
yeah,
and that dense company-owned service center network. It all enables this hyper-efficient coordination across the entire system that directly contributes to their industry-leading service levels. And it's not just labor flexibility. They also focus on their fleet. ODFL maintains one of the youngest fleets in the industry. Their average line haul tractor is less than 4 years old.
Less than 4 years. That's really new for big trucks.
It is. And that minimizes costly downtime from breakdowns, it improves safety, and it enhances fuel efficiency. It all feeds back into that loop of operational excellence and cost control.
It sounds like a truly formidable competitive moat they've built. It's not just one single thing they do well, is it? It's how all these different pieces, the network, the service focus, the technology, the operating model, the fleet, all work together, reinforcing each other. It makes them incredibly hard to compete with on their terms.
That's exactly the key takeaway. It's the synergy and the superior margins they generate from this highly efficient model. They're consistently reinvested back into the business. And crucially, they often do this counter-cyclically.
Meaning they invest even when the economy is weakly.
Precisely. When the market is soft and other carriers are pulling back, cutting costs, maybe delaying investments, ODFL uses its strong financial position to keep investing, keep expanding, keep upgrading.
Playing offense while others play defense.
You got it. This continuous reinvestment further strengthens their network, their service capabilities, their technological edge. It feeds that virtuous cycle we talked about. Better service allows premium pricing, which funds investment in even better infrastructure and tech, which enables even better service and efficiency. It creates this competitive moat that is exceptionally difficult and incredibly costly for any competitor to try and replicate. It gives them a sustained, durable advantage in the market.
That really paints a clear picture of ODFL's internal engine, why they're so effective. But, you know, even the best engine needs to navigate the road conditions. So let's zoom out a bit now. Let's talk about the LTL market itself. What are the big forces shaping this industry? And how does a company like ODFL navigate the, you know, stormy seas of economic cycles and these rapid industry shifts we see?
Excellent point. You can't understand ODFL without understanding the environment it operates in. The U.S. LTL market is it's a substantial and really vital part of the domestic supply chain. Estimates put the market size somewhere between, say, $85 billion and $114 billion for 2024.
That's a big market. Growing.
Yeah, forecasts suggest a pretty healthy compound annual growth rate, somewhere in the range of 4.1% to maybe 6.1% through 2030. So underlying demand is expected to grow.
But the LTL industry is also famous, or maybe infamous, for being highly cyclical, right? It really rides the waves of the broader economy. So what does this mean when the economy hits a rough patch, like that freight recession we experienced recently? How does that impact players like ODFL?
That's a crucial distinction, and it really highlights ODFL's resilience. You're absolutely right. The LTL industry is highly cyclical. It's directly tied to macroeconomic indicators, think industrial production, consumer spending levels, business investment. When those slow down, freight volumes tend to slow down too.
Like what happened from 2022 into 2024?
Exactly. That period, roughly mid-2022 to mid-2024, was widely characterized as a freight recession. Demand softened, volumes declined across the board. That's a classic short-term cyclical pressure. And ODFL certainly felt those volume declines, as we'll see in their financials later.
But you're saying there's more to the story than just the short-term cycle.
Definitely. It's vital to differentiate those cyclical pressures from the longer-term, what we call secular, trends. These are the deeper, more structural shifts happening. And these trends are actually far more powerful tailwinds for a company like ODFL, even when the short-term cycle is weak.
Okay, interesting. So what are these longer-term secular trends that are kind of helping ODFL swim against the cyclical tide, potentially?
Well, there are several powerful underlying trends that uniquely benefit LTL carriers who are focused on high service levels and efficiency. First, think about the continued structural growth of e-commerce.
Right, everyone talks about e-commerce. But isn't that mostly small parcels, not LTL?
It's more than just the final delivery parcel. E-commerce fundamentally changes inventory flows. It requires more frequent, smaller shipments of goods to move inventory closer to consumers into regional distribution centers, micro-fulfillment hubs, even retail stores acting as fulfillment points. That pattern of smaller, more frequent shipments is a natural fit for the LTL model.
Ah, I see. Replenishing those local hubs constantly.
Exactly. Then you have supply chain strategies shifting more towards just-in-time inventory management. Businesses want to hold minimal stock themselves and rely on precise, frequent deliveries from suppliers. That demands reliable, fast transportation again, playing to LTL's strengths, especially high-service LTL like ODFL offers.
Okay, e-commerce, JIT, any others?
Yeah, there's the trend of nearshoring or reshoring manufacturing. As companies bring production back closer to home, maybe to Mexico or the U.S., that naturally increases the need for domestic freight movements within North America.
Makes sense. More domestic production means more domestic shipping.
Right. And finally, there's just this overall heightened emphasis on supply chain resilience, especially after all the disruptions we saw during the pandemic. Companies learn the hard way about the cost of unreliable supply chains. Now, many are more willing to pay a premium for transportation providers they can truly count on to avoid those costly disruptions.
So all these trends, e-commerce, JIT, nearshoring, resilience, they kind of demand exactly what ODFL specializes in. High service, reliability, speed.
Precisely. ODFL, with its unwavering focus on service and reliability, is perfectly positioned to capitalize on these more demanding modern supply chain requirements. These secular trends provide a strong underlying tailwind that helps them navigate the short-term cyclical bumps. And building on those points, let's maybe dig a bit deeper into some of the specific industry drivers and trends that are really shaping the future of LTL right now. Beyond just the broad economic shifts, these movements are having a pretty profound impact on how freight actually moves.
You mentioned e-commerce being a powerful secular tailwind. Can you elaborate on just how significant its expansion is for the LTL market specifically? Like, how much of the market is tied to it now?
It's become a primary and really persistent demand driver. As we said, it's not just about the final parcel delivery. It's about the entire flow of goods needed to support e-commerce. That need for rapid, reliable distribution to a vast network, regional DCs, fulfillment hubs, stores, it fuels LTL demand. It's about moving inventory efficiently through the whole chain. And to put a number on it, the wholesale and retail trade sector, which is heavily influenced by e-commerce logistics, now accounts for roughly 35% of the entire LTL market.
Wow, over a third. That's huge. It really underscores how fundamental that shift is.
It really does. It's changed the game.
And technology, of course, that's transforming everything. What specific tech adoption are we seeing among LTL carriers now? Is it moving beyond just basic track and trace?
Oh, definitely. Carriers are investing in much more advanced systems now. We're talking sophisticated GPS tracking that doesn't just show location, but uses data to predict arrival times with much greater accuracy. Dynamic route optimization software that can adjust routes in real time based on traffic, weather, or maybe new pickup requests.
Getting smarter about routing.
Exactly. We're also seeing more automation in dock operations using technology to speed up the sorting and loading process inside the service centers. And then there's the huge role of sophisticated data analytics. Carriers are using data for everything from fine-tuning their pricing, minute by minute sometimes, to predicting future demand patterns. All these investments are aimed squarely at improving operational efficiency, driving down costs, and enhancing the customer experience through better visibility and predictability. And then there's the consolidation trend within the industry. This has been happening for decades in trucking, really, but it got dramatically accelerated recently.
Talking about Yellow, right.
Exactly. The bankruptcy and subsequent liquidation of Yellow Corp in August 2023, that was a truly seismic event for the LTL sector. Yellow was one of the biggest players, despite their struggles.
So their exit just took a huge chunk of capacity out of the market overnight.
pretty much.
Yeah.
It suddenly removed a very significant amount of trucking capacity. And it led to a scramble where competitors like XPO, Estes, Express Lines, even ODFL to some extent, acquired many of Yellow's terminal assets, their service centers. This fundamentally altered the competitive landscape and created a really unique opportunity for the remaining players.
A massive shakeup. Now, speaking of challenges and shifts, what about the regulatory environment? Trucking always seems to be facing new rules. You mentioned it earlier, but is it possible these regulations, while maybe costly, could also act as a sort of hidden advantage for established strong players like ODFL? That sounds a bit counterintuitive.
You're right. It's a complex and pretty stringent regulatory framework they operate under. It covers everything from driver hours of service rules, safety standards, drug and alcohol testing, vehicle maintenance. The list goes on.
Standard operational hurdles. But what's the big one looming?
I'd say the most significant regulatory challenge looking ahead, especially long term, comes from new environmental standards. Particularly, rules coming out of states like California, driven by the California Air Resources Board, or CARB. These rules are mandating a phased transition towards zero-emission vehicles, ZEVs for heavy-duty trucks.
Zero-emission trucks. Electric. Hydrogen. That sounds like a massive undertaking for big rigs.
It is. And this raises that important question you touched on. While these regulations clearly mean substantial increases in capital spending and probably higher operating costs for all carriers, how would they possibly act as a barrier to entry or even a competitive advantage? It just sounds like a huge cost burden for everyone.
It's a great nuanced point. Here's the thing. The technology for heavy-duty electric or hydrogen-powered trucks that would be suitable for the demands of LTL operations, it's still really in its early stages. It's expensive. The range might be limited. The durability is still being tested.
And the infrastructure isn't there yet, right? Where do you charge thousands of electric semis overnight? Exactly. The charging infrastructure or hydrogen refueling infrastructure needed to support a large-scale LTL fleet across the country. It's simply not in place yet. So carriers face a real challenge and a very significant financial burden to comply with these mandates over the coming years.
Okay, so it's tough for everyone. Where is the advantage for ODFL?
Here's where it becomes an advantage for some. Financially strong, well-managed carriers like ODFL, the ones with those pristine balance sheets we talked about, strong cash flow, access to capital, they are far, far better positioned to actually absorb these massive compliance costs over the long term. They can afford to invest in the new, expensive equipment when it becomes viable. They can potentially invest in the necessary supporting infrastructure at their own facilities.
Ah, so the smaller guys or weaker players, they might really struggle to afford this transition.
Precisely. This dynamic is very likely to accelerate industry consolidation even further. It will benefit the largest, most profitable players like ODFL, who can actually afford the investments required. Smaller, less capitalized companies might struggle to keep up or could even be forced out of the market entirely. So what looks like a cost burden for the whole industry actually becomes a formidable competitive barrier for those who can afford to jump over it. It could ultimately strengthen ODFL's dominant position in the long run by thinning out the competition. Okay, so we've talked about the market forces, the trends, the regulations. Now let's focus squarely on the competitive landscape itself. ODFL doesn't operate in a vacuum, right? Yeah. They face some tough competition.
Yeah, who are the main players they're really going up against day-to-day, the ones vying for that same LTL freight?
It's actually a fairly concentrated market at the top. ODFL competes primarily with a handful of other large national and what they call super-regional carriers. The biggest player, actually, by 2023 revenue was FedEx Freight.
Oh, interesting. FedEx?
Yep. Then you have XPO, Inc., Saia, Inc., ArcBest Corporation. They operate the well-known ABF Freight brand and also TFI International, which owns several LTL carriers. It's a tight group, often quite competitive on price and service, though each might have slightly different network strengths or operational strategies. But despite that intense competition, ODFL holds a really significant and consistently expanding position in the U.S. LTL market. Current estimates put their market share somewhere in the 12 to 13% range.
12 to 13%, that's substantial. Has it always been that high?
Not at all. What's truly remarkable is how they got there. Their market share, just looking at the top 25 LTL carriers, has grown steadily and consistently over two decades. Back in 2002, it was just 2.9%. By the end of 2023, it hit 12.0%.
Wow, from under 3% to 12%. And how did they achieve that growth? Acquisitions?
That's the amazing part, almost entirely organically. They didn't grow by buying up a bunch of other companies, which is common in trucking. They grew by consistently winning business away from their rivals, shipment by shipment, customer by customer, primarily through offering that superior service we keep talking about. Mm. It's growth earned through execution, not check writing.
That kind of sustained organic growth is really impressive, especially over two decades. But you mentioned the YellowCorp bankruptcy earlier. Did that massive event act as a major catalyst, maybe like a one-time boost to ODFL's already growing market share?
Oh, absolutely. The Yellow bankruptcy in 2023 wasn't just a small event. It was a structural inflection point for the entire LTL industry. Yellow, despite all its operational and financial problems over the years, still held a pretty significant chunk of the market. They were often the low-cost provider for many shippers.
So when they shut down, all that freight had to go somewhere, right?
Exactly. Their sudden exit didn't make the underlying freight demand disappear. It just forced hundreds of thousands of shippers to scramble and find new carriers, and find them quickly. In that kind of chaotic environment, what do you think shippers prioritized?
Stability. Reliability. Not getting burned again.
Precisely. Shippers, having just experienced major disruption, likely placed an even higher premium on carrier reliability and service quality when they were reallocating all that freight. And who stands out as the industry's premier service provider?
ODFL.
Right. ODFL was a natural beneficiary of this flight to quality. Mm-hmm. Shippers needing dependable service flocked to them.
So ODFL was able to absorb a lot of that displaced Yellow freight. And crucially, could they do it without compromising their existing service levels, which are already top-notch? And maybe without having to slash prices to win that business? That seems like a real test of their model's capacity and value proposition.
It was a true test, absolutely. And by all accounts, they passed with flying colors. They were able to absorb a significant portion of that displaced freight integrated into their network without compromising their service standards for existing or new customers. Mm-hmm. And importantly, they didn't need to resort to aggressive, margin-killing price cuts to win that volume. They maintained pricing discipline.
That's huge.
It really is. So the Yellow event had this dual effect. First, it structurally improved the overall pricing discipline in the industry because a major source of low-cost, sometimes irrational, capacity just vanished. And second, it simultaneously accelerated ODFL's own long-term market share gain trajectory. You could see it almost immediately in their numbers. There was a clear positive inflection point in ODFL's shipment volumes starting right around September 2023, just after Yellow closed its doors. It basically pulled forward several years of expected market share gains for them. And this ability to capture share and maintain pricing discipline really brings us back to ODFL's wide economic moat, those durable competitive advantages that make them so hard to truly compete with and explain why they can command that premium position.
Okay, let's break down that moat. What are the key pillars?
Pillar number one is absolutely their network density and scale. We talked about the 261 service centers. That physical network, built with around $2.5 billion in real estate investment just since 2014, is a critical strategic asset.
Why is density so important in LTL?
Because having more service centers, strategically placed closer together, enables greater operational efficiency. It allows them to do more direct loading, meaning freight goes straight from an origin center to a destination center without needing multiple intermediate stops or transfers. That reduces handling, cuts transit times, minimizes the chance of damage. It allows them to offer more of those fast next day and 2-day service lanes compared to competitors who might have a sparser network and need more relays. Replicating that dense, optimized network would be incredibly difficult and expensive for anyone else. It's a massive physical barrier to entry.
Okay, network density is pillar one. What's next? You mentioned operational excellence. They constantly talk about being operationally excellent. We've discussed how it translates into great service, but what does it actually look like on their bottom line? How do we see that efficiency translate into financial results, especially compared to their peers?
Right, that operational excellence isn't just talk. It's absolutely quantifiable and, frankly, peerless in the LTL industry. The single best metric to look at here is the operating ratio, or OR.
Remind us what that is again.
Operating ratio measures a company's operating expenses as a percentage of its revenue. So a lower operating ratio is better. It means the company is more efficient and keeps more of each revenue dollar as profit before interest and taxes.
Got it. Lower is better. And ODFL's is low.
Consistently the lowest in the entire LTL industry. By a wide margin, usually, to give you concrete examples. In the strong freight market of 2022, ODFL achieved a record low operating ratio of 70.6%.
70.6. So their expenses were only about 70 cents for every dollar of revenue.
Exactly. Which means their operating profit margin was nearly 30%. Now, even during the freight recession in 2023, when volumes fell and efficiency naturally took a hit, their OR was still a highly impressive 72.0%.
Still incredibly efficient, even in a downturn.
Absolutely. This superior cost control is a direct result of everything we've discussed. That integrated, non-union operating model, their significant investments in technology for optimization, the efficiency driven by their network density, it all flows to the bottom line.
Yeah.
You know, for context, many LTL carriers struggle to get their OR below 90%, even in good times. An OR in the low 70s consistently. That puts ODFL in a league of its own. It's like they're playing a different sport financially.
Okay,
so network density, operational efficiency leading to low OR. What's the third pillar of their moat?
I'm guessing it has to do with pricing.
You got it. The most telling indicator, I think, of ODFL's true competitive strength is its demonstrated pricing power. And this is where it all really comes together, because it highlights just how much value customers place on that reliable service and certainty they provide.
They can charge more, basically.
Not just charge more initially, but consistently implement price increases, they call yield management, that actually outpace their own cost inflation over time. They have leverage with their customers.
Can you give us a really sharp example of that, especially during the recent downturn? Because logically, you'd think raising prices when demand is weak would be almost impossible for most companies. Customers would just leave. Yet ODFL seems to manage it.
It's a truly stark example of their differentiation. Let's look at the second quarter of 2025. As we'll discuss later, this was a period of significant demand weakness for the industry. ODFL's own freight tonnage fell by a hefty 9.3% year over year. Demand was clearly soft.
Okay, volume's down almost 10%, so prices must have fallen too, right?
Wrong. In that exact same quarter, ODFL managed to increase its LTL revenue per hundredweight, which is the best proxy we have for price, excluding fuel surcharges, by a robust 5.3% year over year.
Get out. Volume's down 9%, prices up over 5%. How?
That's the power of their moat. That ability to raise prices, to protect their yield, even in a weak demand environment, while competitors are likely discounting heavily just to keep trucks full. It's the hallmark of a company with a truly differentiated premium service offering that commands intense customer loyalty. It's proof positive that for many of their customers, ODFL isn't just a vendor they can easily swap out. They're seen as a critical supply chain partner, and customers are willing to pay for that reliability even when times are tough. It proves the value proposition isn't just marketing fluff.
Wow. Okay, let's make this even clearer. Can you lay out that profitability comparison for the full year 2023? Just put ODFL's numbers right next to some of those main competitors you mentioned earlier.
Absolutely. Looking at the full year 2023 really drives home the difference. ODFL, as we said, reported revenue of $5.87 billion. Their operating ratio was at stellar 72.0%. And that translated into an industry-leading net profit margin of 21.1%.
21% net margin. Okay, how did the others fare?
Let's take XPO Inc. They actually had higher revenue, $7.70 billion. But their operating ratio was significantly higher, 91.7%. That resulted in a net margin of just 3.5%.
Huge difference, 72% OR versus almost 92%.
Massive. Now look at CN Inc., revenue of $2.8 billion. Mm. Their operating ratio was 86.8%. Better than XPO, but still way above ODFL. Their net margin was 9.9%.
Okay, still less than half of ODFL's net margin.
Right. And finally, ArcBest, ticker ARCB, revenue of $4.4 billion. Their operating ratio was very high at 95.8%, and their resulting net margin was a mere 2.5%.
2.5% compared to ODFL's 21%.
Exactly. When you see those numbers side by side, the gap in operational efficiency and resulting profitability isn't just substantial. It's a chasm. It clearly demonstrates ODFL's unique execution and dominant positioning within the LTL industry. It really does feel like they're playing a different game than most of their public peers.
All right, now let's broaden that out a bit and delve into ODFL's overall financial performance, focusing particularly on that 2022-2024 stretch. That period really tested the resilience of their business model because it captured a full freight cycle, the boom of early 22, and the subsequent downturn.
Okay, so how did their top line, their revenue, hold up during this roller coaster period, especially as the market softened and we hit that freight recession you mentioned?
Well, ODFL's revenue actually hit a record high in 2022. It reached $6.26 billion, which was a remarkable 19.1% jump over 2021. That was driven by both strong volumes early in the year and really favorable pricing conditions.
The peak of the cycle. Exactly. But then, as the freight market inevitably softened and demand weakened through 23 and 24, revenue did naturally decline. It fell to $5.87 billion in 2023 and then dipped slightly further to $5.81 billion for the full year 2024.
So a decline, but maybe not a crash. What drove the decline?
It was almost entirely a function of lower freight volumes being shipped across their network.
Yeah.
We saw the numbers earlier, for instance. In the second quarter of 2025, their LTL tons per day fell by 9.3% year over year. That directly hits revenue.
But the key insight here, I guess, is how they managed to cushion that volume-driven decline, right? It wasn't like their revenue fell off a cliff just because volumes did, which might happen to a company with less pricing power.
Exactly right. That volume-driven revenue decline was significantly cushioned, as we discussed, by ODFL's successful yield management, their ability to raise prices. Even with tonnage falling dramatically in Q2 2025, their revenue per hundredweight, excluding fuel, still increased by that robust 5.3%.
Right, the pricing power metric.
Yep. That clearly demonstrates their exceptional ability to protect price integrity, to maintain their premium pricing, even when the market is weak. It's a rare feat in this cyclical industry, as that peer comparison showed. It really proves they have genuine pricing power, which is the ultimate sign of a differentiated, valuable service. Okay, moving down the income statement to profitability. Their operating ratio, again, that key measure of efficiency, it followed a similar cyclical trend, but starting from a much, much better base than competitors.
It got worse from the peak, but was still good.
Exactly. It hit that record low, meaning best performance, of 70.6% back in 2022. Then, as the lower volumes created what's called operating deleverage.
Explain deleverage quickly again.
Sure. It just means that their fixed costs, think depreciation on all those service centers, certain overhead salaries, these costs don't go down just because volume does. So when revenue falls, those fixed costs have to be spread over fewer revenue dollars, which automatically pushes the operating ratio higher or makes margins look worse.
Got it. Fixed costs spread over less business.
Right. So because of that deleverage from lower volumes, the operating ratio naturally increased or worsened slightly to 72.0% in 2023 and then to 73.4% for the full year 2024. By the second quarter of 2025, it had drifted up to 74.6%.
So definitely a margin contraction from their absolute peak performance. But putting it in perspective, 74.6% R during a freight recession is still pretty remarkable, isn't it?
It's exceptional. While it represents a margin contraction for ODFL, an operating ratio in the mid-70s during a significant freight recession is still a level of performance that most of their peers would likely struggle to achieve even in a strong market. It underscores their underlying efficiency advantage. And as you'd expect, net income followed a similar path, peaked at $1.38 billion in 2022, then declined to $1.24 billion in 2023, and $1.19 billion in 2024. Still highly profitable, just off the record pace. Now, something that really sets ODFL apart financially, especially over the long term, is its consistent generation of industry-leading returns on capital.
Returns on capital, meaning how effectively they use the money invested in the business.
Yep. Exactly. In a highly competitive and very capital-intensive industry like trucking, where you constantly have to buy expensive trucks, build terminals, excess returns are typically competed away over time. It's hard to consistently earn more than your cost of capital, but ODFL manages it consistently. Their ability to sustain high returns on equity, or ROE, that was 25.9% recently, and high returns on assets, ROA, around 20.0%. These levels indicate that their competitive advantages are truly durable and not easily replicated by others. These numbers tell you ODFL is exceptionally good at turning every dollar of shareholder money invested, ROE, and every dollar of assets they own, ROA, into actual profit. It's financial proof that their competitive moat isn't just a nice story. It delivers superior financial returns that compound powerfully over time. And a core reason they can generate those returns and navigate cycles so well is their fortress-like balance sheet. This is really key to their strategy, meaning very little debt. Very little. The company operates with a negligible amount of debt. For instance, at the end of 2023, ODFL had only $80 million in long-term debt on its books. That's compared to over $4.2 billion in shareholders' equity.
Wow. Tiny amount of debt relative to their equity.
Right. It results in an incredibly low debt-to-equity ratio of less than 2%. This provides just immense financial flexibility. And this conservative capital structure, it's a deliberate strategic choice. It enables them to keep investing in their network and fleet right through economic downturns, positioning them to gain market share when the cycle turns without ever being constrained by having too much debt or worrying about lenders. And this strong financial position, low debt, high returns, it all fuels prolific free cash flow generation. ODFL is just a consistent cash machine.
Free cash flow being the cash left over after running the business and investing in it.
Exactly. The cash that's truly free to either return to shareholders, pay down debt, though they don't have much, or build up on the balance sheet. In 2023, for example, they generated $1.48 billion in cash just from their operating activities. Now, they did invest heavily, spending $757 million on capital expenditures, building terminals, buying trucks, but even after that, they were left with substantial free cash flow.
And that continued in 2024.
Similar story. Operating cash flow was even stronger at $1.7 billion against capital expenditures of $771 million. Again, leaving significant free cash flow. This strong, predictable cash generation is the engine that powers their whole strategy, allowing them to simultaneously reinvest heavily for growth and return substantial amounts of capital to their shareholders. They can do both. Okay, to help everyone visualize these trends, especially how ODFL navigated that recent 2022 to mid-2025 cycle, let's quickly summarize the key financial and operational numbers side by side.
Yeah, this should really pull it all together and show their performance against that tough market backdrop we've been discussing.
Right, so the clear trend, looking from 2022 through Q2 2025, is that while ODFL's top line did dip with the freight recession, revenue falling from that peak of $6.26 billion in 22, down to around $5.8 billion in 23 and 24, and showing quarterly declines in early 25.
Expected in a downturn.
Expected. But their profitability proved exceptionally resilient. Operating income and net income followed a similar path, declining from the 2022 peaks, but maintaining really substantial absolute levels throughout. For example, net income was still a very healthy $1.19 billion in 2024 during the recession.
So lower volumes meant lower absolute profit dollars, naturally, but their underlying efficiency kept those profits remarkably high compared to peers.
That's the perfect summary. Their operating ratio, that gold standard of efficiency, while it did rise from the record low of 70.6% in 22 up to 74.6% by Q2 25, that level still represents operational excellence that their competitors, frankly, can only dream of achieving, even in boom times. Now, if you look at the volume metrics, LTL tons per day and LTL shipments per day, the numbers clearly show the impact of the freight recession. You see consistent year-over-year declines throughout 2023, 2024, and into mid-2025. That tells you underlying demand was definitely weak.
But the real kicker, the counter-cyclical strength that proves their moat, as we discussed, is in that pricing metric. The revenue per hundredweight. It held up even while volumes were falling.
Exactly. That metric, LTL revenue per hundredweight, excluding fuel year-over-year percent change, remained solidly positive throughout this entire challenging period. It was plus 8.5% in 22, plus 6.4% in 23, plus 4.6% in 24, plus 4.1% in Q1 25, and that robust plus 5.3% in Q2 25 we highlighted. This metric just powerfully underscores their pricing power, their ability to protect yields even in a tough market. It's the strongest testament to their differentiated service and the value customers place on ODFL's reliability. And just a quick housekeeping note, the earnings per share data for 2024 and 2025 that you might see in reports has been adjusted to reflect the 2-for-1 stock split they did back in March 2024.
Got it. Okay, that financial resilience is clear. Now let's shift to growth. They've obviously grown significantly over the years to become the number two player, but how have they done it? Especially in an industry like trucking where big mergers and acquisitions seem so common among other large players. You know, companies often build scale by just buying up their competitors.
That's honestly one of their most distinguishing characteristics, and I think a key part of their secret sauce. ODFL's impressive long-term growth, getting from that sub 3% market share to over 12%, has been achieved almost entirely through organic means.
Organic meaning?
Yep.
Winning customers one by one, not buying growth.
Exactly. It's a stark contrast to many of their competitors who have frequently relied on large, sometimes complex and often messy acquisitions to expand their footprint or boost their revenue numbers. ODFL's strategy has been relentlessly consistent. Focus on winning business directly from rivals by simply providing a superior service offering. They steadily gain market share over time, shipment by shipment, customer relationship by customer relationship.
That sounds harder, maybe slower, but potentially more sustainable.
I think that's right. It requires incredible discipline and execution over a long period. And the results speak for themselves. Look at their compound annual growth rate in revenue over the two decades leading up to 2023. It was a remarkable 11.5% per year compounded. That's fantastic growth, primarily achieved by just out-executing the competition day in and day out. And the absolute engine of ODFL's organic growth and a major strategic differentiator is that consistent and often countercyclical capital expenditure strategy we touched on earlier.
Right. Investing when others pull back. Can you flesh that out a bit more? How does that practically drive growth?
Well, think about it. During economic downturns, when freight volumes soften and uncertainty is high, what's the natural reaction for many companies, especially publicly traded ones?
Cut costs, preserve cash, maybe delay big investments until things look better.
Exactly. They pull back on capital expenditures to protect near-term margins and conserve cash. ODFL, leveraging its strong balance sheet and long-term perspective, does the opposite. They keep investing, sometimes even accelerate investment, right through the downturn.
So they're playing offense when others are playing defense, like building capacity specifically when the market is weak, getting ready for the eventual recovery.
Precisely. Their capital spending remained high even through the recent recession. It totaled $757 million in 2023, and they budgeted a similar amount, around $750 million for 2024. And where does that money go? Primarily into real estate acquisitions, building new or expanding existing service centers, and continually modernizing their truck and trailer fleet.
So how is that an offensive weapon? How does building during a slump help them grab share later?
Because by building capacity ahead of demand, and crucially, doing it during periods of market weakness, when maybe construction costs are lower or competitors aren't bidding on the same properties, ODFL ensures it has the available terminal doors, the available trucks, the available drivers, ready to go when the freight cycle inevitably turns positive again.
Ah, so when demand surges back, they're ready, while others might be caught flat-footed.
Exactly. As demand comes roaring back, competitors who pulled back on investment might find themselves capacity constrained. They might have to turn away lucrative business or risk service failures because they don't have enough trucks or terminal space. Meanwhile, ODFL, having invested through the cycle, is perfectly positioned to onboard those new customers smoothly and capture a significant chunk of market share right when it matters most during the upswing. This proactive, countercyclical investment in capacity isn't just spending. It's a core pillar of their long-term market share gain strategy. It ensures they're ready for growth when it comes. And looking ahead, even with their current 12-13% market share, ODFL's management team sees a pretty long runway for continued growth. They don't think they're anywhere near hitting a ceiling.
Really? Even as the number two player, where do they see the growth coming from?
Well, they fundamentally believe there's still a large addressable market out there to penetrate. Remember, even at 13%, that means 87% of the market is still held by competitors. They see opportunity primarily by continuing to take share from less efficient or less reliable carriers, just like they've been doing for decades. Plus, several factors support this optimistic outlook for future growth.
Okay, what are the biggest specific opportunities that they're likely eyeing right now that could drive their growth forward in the next few years?
Well, first off, the fallout from the YellowCore exit is still playing out. That event permanently removed a major competitor and, as we discussed, created a more rational pricing environment overall. This presents a clear, ongoing opportunity for well-run carriers like ODFL to continue capturing share from shippers who are still looking for stability and reliability after that disruption. That's an immediate, impactful tailwind that's probably not over yet.
Makes sense. Keep grabbing that former yellow business. What else?
Second, those powerful secular tailwinds we talked about earlier. They're not going away. The continued structural growth of e-commerce logistics, the ongoing trend towards nearshoring or reshoring manufacturing back to North America, and that heightened emphasis by shippers on building resilient supply chains. All these are expected to persistently increase the demand for high-service domestic LTL transportation, playing right into ODFL's sweet spot. These are long-term, fundamental demand drivers.
And technology, are they still finding ways to get better there?
Absolutely. ODFL's ongoing investment in technology is also a future growth driver. They're continuously looking for ways to get more efficient and scalable. Think about advancements in artificial intelligence for things like load planning or route optimization. As these technologies mature, they offer the potential to further enhance operational efficiency, maybe squeeze out even more margin gains, and definitely improve the scalability of their network as they grow. They're always looking for those marginal gains through tech.
Okay, so they generate incredible amounts of cash flow. They have that fortress-like balance sheet. Now let's talk about what ODFL actually does with all that money. What are their financial priorities? How do they decide where to allocate that capital? Do they just hoard it, or do they, you know, share the wealth with investors?
That's a great question, because how a company allocates capital tells you a lot about its strategy and its priorities. ODFL's capital allocation framework is actually a model of discipline and, I think, strong shareholder alignment.
What's priority number one?
Their first and foremost priority, without any exception, is always to reinvest right back into their own business to support that long-term organic growth strategy we've been talking about.
So funding those CapEx projects, the terminals, the trucks, the tech.
Exactly. That's demonstrated by their consistent and significant capital expenditure program year after year. They see this internal reinvestment as the primary highest return use of their capital because it strengthens the moat and drives future value creation. That always comes first.
Okay, makes sense. Grow the core business first. But after funding all that internal growth, do they return capital to shareholders? Is there a balance there?
Absolutely. After they've fully funded all the internal growth initiatives they think make sense and ensure they maintain that strong, flexible balance sheet, ODFL then returns the excess capital generated back to its shareholders.
How do they do that? Dividends? Buybacks?
Primarily through a combination of both, regular dividends and share repurchases. For instance, looking at 2023 again, the company deployed about $453.6 million to buy back its own stock, and it paid out $175.1 million in dividends to shareholders.
So significant returns. What about the dividend specifically? Is it growing?
Yeah, they have a remarkably strong track record of dividend growth recently. They've delivered 7 consecutive years of dividend increases, and not small increases either. They announced a substantial 30% hike for the first quarter of 2024, and then followed up with another 7.7% increase post-split for the first quarter of 2025. This consistent, healthy dividend growth really signals management's confidence in the company's future cash flow generation and their clear commitment to returning value to shareholders. And underpinning this entire capital allocation strategy, the reinvestment, the dividends, the buybacks, is their unwavering commitment to maintaining that strong, flexible balance sheet with minimal leverage.
Why is keeping debt so low such a core principle for them?
Because that conservative financial posture provides crucial stability. It allows them to confidently invest right through economic cycles, even severe recessions, without worrying about breaking debt covenants or facing pressure from lenders. It ensures they can always seize opportunities, maybe acquire strategic real estate when others can't, or aggressively pursue market share during downturns without being constrained by their financial position. It's all about ensuring long-term strategic optionality and resilience, not just maximizing returns in the short term by taking on lots of debt. And just to give everyone a really quantitative view of these priorities in action, how they actually deploy their cash, let's quickly look at their capital allocation summary for the years 2022 through 2024.
Yeah, this should clearly illustrate how they balanced that reinvestment in the business versus returning capital to shareholders, even during that tough freight cycle period.
Precisely. So first, look at cash flow from operations. This is the cash the business itself generated. It was consistently robust, $1.69 billion in 2022, $1.48 billion in 2023, the recession year, and bounced back to $1.65 billion in 2024. Shows that strong underlying cash engine.
Okay, strong cash generation. How much went back into the business?
Their total capital expenditures were substantial and remarkably consistent, right around that $775 million mark each year. $775 million in 22, $757 million in 23, $771 million in 24. This demonstrates that unwavering commitment to reinvesting in their network and fleet, regardless of the short-term economic climate.
And where did that CapEx mostly go?
The breakdown shows the strategic priorities. Roughly 40% to 50% each year went into real estate, buying land, building, or expanding service centers. Another 40% to 50% went into the fleet, new tractors, new trailers. The small remainder, usually under 10%, was for technology and other investments. So you clearly see the disciplined, significant reinvestment in their core physical assets.
Okay, so roughly $750 million a year going back into the business. What about returns to shareholders?
Alongside those heavy investments, they returned significant capital. Share repurchases were quite large in 22 at $1.3 billion. Likely taking advantage of market conditions, then $454 million in 23 and $825 million in 24. Dividends paid were consistent and growing steadily, $135 million in 22, $175 million in 23, and $168 million in 24. Slight dip likely due to timing.
So adding those up, the total capital return looks pretty substantial too.
Very substantial. The total capital return to shareholders ranged from $629 million in 2023 up to $1.44 billion in 2022. This summary table really illustrates their balanced approach. Prioritize disciplined internal investment for long-term growth first, then return the robust excess cash flow back to shareholders, using share buybacks more opportunistically based on market conditions and their stock price. Now, while ODFL's long-term performance has obviously been exceptional and remarkably resilient, that period from 2022 into mid-2024 really did highlight the inherent challenges of operating in the cyclical industry. It definitely tested their business model.
Right. So what was the number one headwind they were battling during that time, and how did it actually manifest in their day-to-day operations or results?
The main challenge, hands down, was that prolonged freight recession we keep mentioning. It wasn't just a quick dip. It was a sustained period of softness. And it was driven by a combination of factors: a generally soft U.S. domestic economy, retailers aggressively destocking inventories they had overordered during the pandemic supply chain chaos, and also the dampening effect of higher interest rates on industrial activity and consumer spending on goods.
All hitting freight demand at once.
Pretty much. And all these factors led to significant year-over-year declines in freight volumes across the entire industry. We saw ODFL's numbers earlier. LTL tons per day falling 8.2% in Q4 2024, another 6.3% drop in Q1 2025, and then that substantial 9.3% decline in Q2 2025. That just reflects broad-based weakness in demand for shipping services. And this sharp drop in freight volume, the amount of stuff moving through their network, created that negative operating leverage effect we touched on.
Right, the fixed costs getting spread over less business, hurting margins.
Exactly. As a highly efficient network carrier, ODFL's profitability is actually quite sensitive to volume levels. High volumes allow them to maximize the utilization of their expensive assets, the trucks, the terminals, and their labor force. When volumes fall significantly, those fixed costs, like appreciation on their ever-expanding service center network, rent, certain management salaries, don't decrease proportionally. They get spread over a smaller revenue base. This was the principal reason why their operating ratio increased, moving from that record low of 70.6% in 2022 up towards the mid-74s by Q2 2025. It just shows that even the absolute best, most efficient operator isn't totally immune to basic economic physics when demand drops.
Okay, so even with their unparalleled efficiency, they couldn't fully escape those cyclical margin pressures from lower volume. Now, what about cost inflation during that period? Were they also battling rising costs on multiple fronts? Did that compound the volume problem?
Oh, absolutely. It's kind of double whammy. In addition to the pressure from lower volumes, ODFL, like everyone else, had to navigate a period of significant cost inflation across several key areas.
Like what? Labor? Fuel?
Yes, definitely labor. They faced increased costs for employee wages and benefits. They specifically cited pressure from higher group health and dental plan costs as a headwind to margins in recent earnings calls. Then, equipment and maintenance. Lingering supply chain disruptions meant higher prices and often longer wait times for new tractors and trailers. Plus, the cost for parts and maintenance on their existing large fleet also went up.
And fuel, that's always volatile.
Fuel is always a factor. Now, ODFL uses fuel surcharge programs, like most carriers, which are designed to pass through most of the volatile cost of diesel to customers. These help mitigate the impact. But the mechanisms don't always perfectly or immediately offset the cost changes, especially when prices swing wildly. And somewhat ironically, when fuel prices fall sharply, while that's a cost benefit, it can actually act as a headwind to their total reported revenue, because the associated fuel surcharge revenue they collect also declines. So falling fuel can make top-line growth look weaker, even if underlying pricing is strong. Now, a really key factor in ODFL's sustained success, and especially its ability to navigate all these challenges we've been discussing, is widely considered to be the quality of its management team and its corporate governance structure.
Okay, let's talk about the people running the show. Who are the key players in their leadership team, and what's their track record like, especially in an industry that's seen so many booms and busts?
ODFL is led by a really seasoned team. These aren't newcomers. They're industry veterans with deep experience and, importantly, impressively long tenures at ODFL itself. The CEO is Marty Freeman, and the CFO is Adam Satterfield. Both have been central figures in guiding the company's strategy and communicating its performance transparently for many years. There's a lot of stability there.
And the founding family is still involved, right? The Congdons?
Yes. The founding Congdon family maintains a significant presence and influence. David S. Congdon serves as the executive chairman of the board. This continued family involvement helps ensure a strong continuity of the company's unique culture and a consistent focus on the long-term vision, rather than just short-term results.
Any other notable points about the team?
Well, one interesting move that I think underscores their commitment to high-quality investor communication and market transparency was their hiring of Jack Atkins in March 2024. He came on as the new director of investor relations.
Why is that notable?
Because Mr. Atkins wasn't just an IR professional. He was previously a very well-known and highly respected senior transportation analyst on Wall Street, covering companies like ODFL for years. So he brings incredibly deep industry knowledge and strong relationships within the investment community directly into the company. It signals they want to engage effectively with the market. And this management team, collectively, has demonstrated just a remarkably consistent and disciplined adherence to its long-term strategic plan. We keep coming back to it, but that plan centered on organic growth through superior service, disciplined pricing, and continuous investment in capacity and technology hasn't really wavered for decades. It's not a flavor-of-the-month strategy. It's been the unchanging blueprint for their success.
And their track record proves they can execute on that plan.
Absolutely. Their historical financial and operational performance, including navigating multiple recessions and booms successfully, stands as clear testament to this team's exceptional execution capabilities. They don't just talk the talk. They consistently deliver on that long-term strategy. They stay the course. Their history of capital allocation decisions also reveals that prudent and value-creating framework we discussed. That clear hierarchy of priorities. Number one, reinvest in the business for high-return organic growth. Number two, maintain that fortress balance sheet. And number three, return all the excess cash to shareholders. That structured approach is really a hallmark of a high-quality management team focused on long-term shareholder value creation, not just empire building or chasing short-term fads. And that counter-tactical investment approach in particular is strategically brilliant and requires real discipline to stick with. And just quickly on corporate governance, ODFL seems to maintain pretty robust and standard practices there. Their board of directors has 12 nominees currently, and a clear majority of them, 8 out of 12, are classified as independent directors.
Meaning they're not company executives or major shareholders, provides oversight.
Exactly. It ensures proper independent oversight and accountability to all shareholders. The company also files regular detailed proxy statements with the SEC, which provide transparency into things like board composition, how the board committees function, executive compensation policies, and other governance matters. It gives investors a pretty clear view into how the company is run and overseen.
Okay, so despite ODFL's incredibly strong competitive position, their impressive operational track record, great management, it's crucial we also acknowledge the key risk factors. What could potentially challenge their performance or maybe temper that very bullish long-term outlook? No company is risk-free.
Absolutely. What's the single biggest, most significant, maybe most immediate risk they face? The one that probably keeps management up at night the most? I think without a doubt, the most significant and immediate risk is simply macroeconomic and cyclical risk. ODFL's business is just inextricably linked to the health of the overall U.S. domestic economy. A deep or unexpectedly prolonged recession would inevitably lead to further declines in freight volumes, which would materially and adversely affect their revenue, their profitability, and their cash flows. That's the biggest variable largely outside their direct control, no matter how well they execute. Okay, the economy is number one. What's next? Competition. Definitely. Competitive and pricing risk is always present. While ODFL has demonstrated amazing pricing power and clearly commands a premium for its service, the LTL industry remains intensely competitive. Aggressive pricing actions by competitors, especially during downturns when rivals might get desperate for volume just to keep trucks moving and cover costs, could potentially limit ODFL's ability to maintain its premium pricing differential. That could compress their industry-leading margins if competition got truly irrational for a sustained period.
And we talked about those environmental regulations earlier, the zero-emission vehicle mandates, especially from California. Is that still considered a major long-term risk, even though it might eventually help strong players consolidate the market?
Yes, absolutely. That regulatory risk, specifically around environmental rules, is substantial long-term. Mandates for a phased transition to ZEVs could require just massive capital investments in new truck technologies and the supporting charging or refueling infrastructure. And as we discussed, that technology isn't fully mature or cost-effective yet for heavy-duty trucking, and the infrastructure barely exists nationwide. So this could significantly increase both capital spending requirements and potentially operating costs over the coming decade or two. It's a huge financial and operational hurdle for the entire industry, even if ODFL is better positioned than most to handle it eventually. Then you have operational and labor risks. This includes the persistent industry-wide shortage of qualified truck drivers and skilled maintenance technicians. That shortage can lead to upward pressure on wages and benefits costs and could potentially even limit ODFL's ability to grow if they simply can't find enough people to staff their trucks and terminals.
Makes sense. Can't grow without drivers.
Right. And as a heavily technology-dependent company, ODFL is also always exposed to the risk of operational disruptions from things like major system failures or cybersecurity incidents. And lastly on this front, although ODFL's workforce is currently union-free, which is a key competitive advantage, any potential future successful unionization efforts would all certainly be a significant negative catalyst. It would likely increase their operating costs and reduce that operational flexibility that gives them an edge today. And one more worth mentioning, customer concentration risk. While ODFL boasts a well-diversified customer base, their single largest customer accounts for less than 2.6% of their total revenue, which is great.
So no single point of failure there.
Right. But their top 20 customers collectively represent about 21.5% of their total revenue.
Right.
So while it's diversified, there is still a degree of reliance on a core group of very large shippers. A significant reduction in business from several of these key customers simultaneously, perhaps due to a major downturn in their specific industries, or maybe a strategic shift in their own logistics approach, could still adversely affect ODFL's overall results. It's a manageable risk, but one to be aware of.
Okay, thank you for laying out those risks. Now this brings us to the really interesting part for many of our listeners, especially those who track companies and look for potential investment ideas. We've established ODFL's undeniable strengths, their operational excellence, that formidable competitive moat. So why does ODFL consistently trade at such a high valuation compared to its peers and often compared to its own historical averages? And the big question, is that premium truly justified by the quality, or is it maybe a sign of potential overvaluation, especially for a cyclical company?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? And you're right. As of mid-2025, ODFL definitely trades at premium valuation multiples. We're talking a forward price-to-earnings, or PE, ratio, somewhere in the range of 27 to 29 times expected earnings. Its enterprise value to EBITDA multiple, another common metric, is around 18 times.
And how does that compare historically for ODFL itself? Is that normal for them?
Well, looking back over the last 5 years, while these multiples have come down a bit from their absolute peaks during the post-pandemic boom, they definitely remain elevated compared to ODFL's own five-year average multiples. So even by its own historical standards, the valuation still looks pretty rich today, even after the stock price maybe underperformed for a bit during the freight recession.
Okay, so it's expensive relative to its own history. How does it look compared to those LTL peers we discussed earlier? Is the premium consistent across the board?
Well, it's remarkably consistent. That gap is usually quite wide. ODFL consistently trades at a significant valuation premium compared to its direct LTL competitors. On nearly every standard valuation metric, you look at PE, EBITDA, price to sales, price to book, ODFL's multiples are substantially higher than those of peers like XPO, Saia, and especially ArcBest. The market clearly, consistently assigns a much higher quality multiple to ODFL's earnings, its cash flows, and its assets. So the core debate around ODFL's valuation really boils down to this. Is that persistent, significant premium truly justified? Or is the market maybe getting ahead of itself?
What's the bullish case? Why should investors pay more for ODFL?
The bullish argument is essentially that investors are rationally paying a premium for demonstrably superior quality and predictability, even within a cyclical industry. This premium, the bulls argue, is warranted by ODFL's consistently higher and more stable profitability, both operating and net margins, its industry-leading returns on invested capital that we talked about, its pristine balance sheet, which signifies much lower financial risk, and its proven ability to grow market share and protect its pricing power right through the economic cycles.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, the argument is you're paying up, but you're getting a truly top-tier blue-chip operator that earns significantly more per dollar of revenue and per dollar of assets than any of its rivals. You pay for quality.
Okay, that makes sense. Pay more for the best. What's the counter-argument? The bearish take on that premium? Is it just fundamentally too expensive for a freight company, no matter how good they are?
The bearish argument is essentially that the premium has just become excessive, especially for a company operating in such a deeply cyclical industry like freight. The current valuation, bears would argue, seems to price in a scenario of near flawless execution going forward and assumes a relatively swift and strong recovery in the freight economy, leaving very little margin for error if things don't go perfectly.
So priced for perfection.
Somewhat, yeah. You can also look at metrics like the PEG ratio, which compares the PE ratio to the expected earnings growth rate. A PEG ratio significantly above 2.0 for ODFL suggests the valuation might be high relative to its anticipated growth. This means if there's an extended period of economic weakness, or if ODFL has any unexpected operational missteps, or maybe fails to execute on its market share gains as effectively as hoped, the valuation could be exposed to significant downside risk as analysts are forced to revise those future earnings estimates lower. It's like buying a luxury car at a huge premium. It performs great. but any little dent or unexpected repair feels a lot more painful financially. Now, if we connect this valuation discussion back to the bigger picture, there's one more important and I think often overlooked aspect of ODFL's valuation. It relates to the underlying value of its physical assets, particularly its real estate.
You mean those 261 service centers? How does that play into valuation?
Well, remember, on their balance sheet, ODFL carries that extensive portfolio of service centers at their historical cost, minus whatever depreciation they've taken over the years.
So what they paid for the land and buildings maybe decades ago, not what they're worth today.
Exactly. Given the billions of dollars they've invested over decades in acquiring land and developing these facilities, many of which are increasingly strategic and high-value industrial locations near major cities or transportation corridors.
Yeah.
The current market value of this real estate portfolio is almost certainly significantly higher, perhaps vastly higher, than the value stated on their books.
So there's potentially a lot of hidden asset value there that doesn't show up in standard metrics like price to book?
Precisely. And this isn't just an interesting accounting footnote. This hidden real estate value provides a substantial potential margin of safety for investors. It acts almost like a concrete floor supporting the stock's value, independent of short-term earnings fluctuations. And crucially, it also powerfully underscores that immense capital barrier we keep talking about. How much would it cost a competitor today to try and replicate ODFL's strategically located physical network from scratch at current real estate prices? An astronomical amount. So this underlying asset value reinforces the strength and durability of their economic moat. It's a huge, tangible asset base that doesn't always get fully captured when people just look at PE ratios. And just to really hammer home this premium valuation we've been dissecting, let's quickly look at a table comparing ODFL's key valuation multiples against its peers and the sector median as of mid-2025.
Yeah, this should make it crystal clear just how differently the market values ODFL compared to the others in its space.
Indeed. Let's start with PE ratio based on next 12 months earnings, NTM. ODFL is trading around 29.1x. Compare that to its own five-year average of 32.1x, so it's a bit below its peak average. But look at the peers. XPO is higher currently at 32.6x, maybe reflecting turnaround expectations. Saia is close at 27.7x, but ArcBest, ARCB, is way down around 11-12x. The overall sector median PE is only 20.0, so ODFL is clearly well above the median.
Okay, significant PE premium over the sector and most peers. What about EBITDA?
EBITDA NTM tells a similar story. ODFL is at 18.3x, again a bit below its five-year average of 19.4x, but the peers, XPO is lower around 14-15x, Saia around 15-16x, and ArcBest again much lower around 5-6x. The sector median EBITDA is only 12.0x, so again, ODFL commands a very clear premium on an enterprise value basis.
And price to book, does that show the hidden asset value?
Well, price book trailing 12 months for ODFL is 7.1x, which is actually below its five-year average of 9.5x, maybe reflecting that the market isn't giving full credit for the real estate today. But compare it to peers. XPO is similar at 7.9x, Saia lower around 5-6x, and ArcBest is barely above book value at around 1.0x. The sector median price book is only 2.9x. So even on book value, ODFL trades at a substantial premium to the sector, though maybe not fully capturing that potential hidden asset value. Lastly, dividend yield. Does a premium valuation mean a lower yield?
Generally, yes. ODFL's forward dividend yield is around 0.8%, which is double its five-year average of 0.4% because they've grown the dividend so much. But it's still relatively low compared to the sector median of 1.5%. XPO and Saia currently pay no dividend, 0.0%, while ArcBest's yield is similar to ODFL's at around 0.7%. So the takeaway from this table is consistent. ODFL trades at a premium across the board, reflecting the market's appreciation for its superior quality, operational excellence, and financial strength, even if that premium remains a key point of debate for investors regarding future returns.
Okay, that's a fantastic deep dive into ODFL's business, its market, its financials, and its valuation. So let's bring it home. What does all this mean for you, our listener? If you want to keep an eye on this company or maybe just track the health of the broader LTL industry, what are the absolute vital signs? What are the key performance indicators, the KPIs, that will tell you what's really happening under the hood when new data comes out? Give us the deep dive checklist.
Absolutely. If you want to monitor ODFL or the LTL sector, here's a checklist of the most important KPIs to watch and understand. First, and arguably the single most critical metric reflecting operational efficiency, is the operating ratio.
Uh-huh.
Monitor its quarterly progression.
Yeah.
You want to see it stay low, ideally improving, going lower during economic expansions. Any sustained negative trend or increasing is a red flag.
Okay, OR is number one for efficiency. What about tracking the actual demand environment, the pulse of the freight market itself?
For volume and demand, keep a very close eye on the year-over-year percentage change in LTL shipments per day and also LTL tons per day. A consistent return to positive growth in these metrics would be a strong signal that the freight cycle is recovering, which would be a major tailwind for ODFL in the industry. These are your frontline indicators of demand, strength, or weakness. Next, for pricing power, which is ODFL's secret weapon, the metric to watch is the year-over-year percentage change in LTL revenue per hundredweight, excluding fuel surcharges, sometimes abbreviated as LTL RevT8 ex fuel. Continued solid growth in this metric, especially if it's consistently exceeding the rate of inflation, is direct proof of their pricing discipline and the value customers place on their service. If this metric starts to weaken or turn negative, it's a serious warning sign about their competitive position.
And what about those crucial service quality metrics we discussed earlier? The 99% on time, the tiny claims ratio, are those reported regularly?
They are fundamental to ODFL's premium status, and management usually comments on them in earnings calls. Keep an ear out for the reported on-time delivery percentage. The target is always 99% or better, and their cargo claims ratio. Target is 0.1% or lower. Any noticeable sustained degradation in these numbers could signal underlying operational problems or maybe increased competitive pressure, forcing them to take on freight they can't handle perfectly. Also related to operations is the freight mix. Watch for trends in weight per shipment and average length of haul. Sometimes an increase in weight per shipment can be an early indicator of improving industrial activity as customers ship larger orders. And finally, how do you track if they're actually winning that market share they aim for? Good question. The best ways to compare ODFL's reported volume growth in tons or shipments per day each quarter relative to the volume growth reported by its main competitors like XPO, Saia, and ArcBest in their earnings releases. If ODFL is consistently growing volumes faster than its peers or shrinking less during downturns, that's strong evidence of continued market share gains. And one last thing, keep an eye on their quarterly and annual capital expenditures. Monitor the actual spending relative to the company's guidance to ensure they're maintaining that discipline, strategic investment in their network. Consistent reinvestment is key to their long-term success and maintaining that competitive moat.
Fantastic. That's a really practical checklist. So, wrapping up, we've taken a truly deep dive today into Old Dominion Freight Line. We've revealed how this company manages to stand out as a premium operator, even within a notoriously tough and cyclical industry like freight.
Yeah, it really comes down to that combination. Mm-hmm. Their superior service levels built on decades of network investment, their disciplined pricing strategy, that robust, dense network itself, and crucially, those counter-cyclical investments. It all works together to forge that powerful competitive moat.
Allowing them to maintain industry-leading profitability, navigate downturns better than rivals, and continuously gain market share over the long haul. They essentially turn the uncertainty of freight into reliable service for their customers.
It's really a fascinating case study, isn't it? How that relentless focus on operational excellence and a clear long-term vision can create such a profound and durable competitive advantage, even in what might seem like a commoditized industry from the outside.
It really is. So here's a final provocative thought for you, our listener, to chew on. Considering ODFL's unique ability to not just survive, but actually thrive and maintain a premium valuation in this tough cyclical industry, what does their relentless focus on operational excellence, on disciplined pricing, and especially on that long-term counter-cyclical investment strategy tell us about building truly durable business success?
Mm-hmm. And how does that compare maybe to companies in other industries that might prioritize short-term quarterly gains or perhaps rely heavily on flashy, potentially risky acquisitions for growth instead of grinding out organic improvements year after year?
It definitely raises some important questions about what constitutes sustainable competitive advantage in today's unpredictable world. Maybe sometimes the most, dare I say, boring, path-consistent, disciplined execution, compounding advantages slowly over decades is actually what creates the most valuable and resilient businesses in the end.
Something to think about for sure.
We encourage you to reflect on how these principles, focused execution, disciplined investment, unwavering service might apply not just to the LTL industry, but perhaps to other sectors you follow or even within your own strategic planning. Thanks for joining us on the Deep Dive.